Hey, thanks for being with us. Want to thank Rick Kamla for joining us. And I want to apologize because Rick Kamla did say something there that we should have corrected him on. And somebody pointed this out here on the text line, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Remember, he was talking about how, hey, I got to be honest, your team basically treading water this year, this and that. He said something about Davionis not working out. Yeah, and somebody on the text line here is Johnny K. From Hey Johnny K. This guy's wrong about Davion Mitchell. His game has been better.
Yes.
And you're right, Johnny K.
We should have called him out.
We should have. Yeah, yeah. And I just told him, hey, keep it on the Kings, but you're right, Johnny K. We should have mentioned to him. That's actually not correct.
Yeah, it's especially as of late. Like Davion, you know, we talk about Keon, and yes, Keon's in the rotation. Davion as well. I mean, that two-headed monster. If you're Mike Brown to be able to go to two guards off the bench that plays defense like that. So, yeah, Davion's playing extremely well right now.
From the 916, Cousins was never mature enough to be a leader. The culture was toxic. That's from Allen. Mature, I don't know, but he was not – he wasn't established enough in a lot of ways to be the piece that you could build on. He just he just wasn't.
I think for Cousins, and I don't know him as well as, you know, a lot of people around here, but – he was at Kentucky when I was at Louisville. He, you know, he would play for John Calipari, so I got to cover him a little bit. I think having the right head coach is so important for him, or was so important. And as I think about it now, here in 2024, and you guys tell me, George Karl and DeMarcus Cousins does not seem like they would coexist okay. And
it was
good.
The opposite.
Same thing with Rondo,
coexist.
Too. Like, yeah. It's a, like, especially now, we know what we know about George Karl and some of the stuff he's saying about Carmelo and the way, like, it that seems like no wonder that didn't work out.
Right,
like
right.
Those that's oil and water trying to mix.
Well, then on top of that, and you're right, you got that to begin with, and then George Karl trying to get rid of DeMarcus, and then they decide, no, we're not doing that. So
right.
You know, you two have to coexist now. On top of that, so that had no chance, none whatsoever.
And I think now, in today's NBA especially, the relationship between your star player and your head coach has to be on point. And so as a team, an organization, when you go out there and you hire a coach, it can't just be, oh, let's find the best coach. No, it has to be, can this coach coexist and work with this player?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's extremely important. And I think that's why when you look at the success of the Sacramento Kings, Mike Brown in his humility and his ability to communicate, being a military guy like he was, you know, grew up all around, you know, Germany, Ohio, he's been around. So he's been in many different situations. His ability to communicate to the guys, I think, is extremely important. Whereas you look like a guy like George Karl back then, I would imagine – Cousins wasn't trying to hear that. You know, he wasn't trying to hear what George Karl was saying.
A couple examples of that. Last night, Mike Brown was asked after the game how Malik was doing. Mm. You know, because Malik had whatever that was happened. And even Coach Brown didn't seem exactly sure what happened. But he said, I think Malik is fine, because after the game, Malik said, we're now 3-0 when we don't have shoot around, and I hope the coach hears me. And he said, I was standing right next to him when he said it. So as Malik being Malik, I think he's fine. But George Karl, I remember one time they were training in La Jolla, and I was down there and had a workout, and then talking to George Karl afterwards, and he's saying, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein's good or whatever. And he said, Cuz is crazy. And, you know, the media's like, he's like, no, Cuz is crazy.
He said that?
Yeah, he wasn't kidding. He was like, this guy is crazy.
And he wasn't joking. He wasn't.
Well, I don't know. I mean, people thought he was. I thought of that. Oh, I'm not sure he's joking. But somebody, you know, the one coach here that kind of got through to DeMarcus a little bit was
Michael Malone.
Michael Malone.
Yeah.
And a player who was on that team told me, like, Michael Malone wouldn't take anything. Michael Malone would throw him out of practice.
Mm.
And, you know, there was also, before that, it was like, the organization would, like, you have to give him his way, you coddle him, and Michael was like, no, get out of here.
Right.
And you notice when DeMarcus was making his comeback, he ended up playing a little bit
more. Yeah, for Denver,
now,
yeah.
They didn't want him back either, but, you know, that spoke to that. You had a coach there who wouldn't, like, this is the way we're doing it, and if you don't like it, too bad.
You know, as I sit here and hear you tell these stories, if you were to do a Kings 30 for 30, like just a different era, that the DeMarcus Cousins era would have to be one, right?
Yeah.
Like a guy that's so supremely talented, how come it didn't work out?
Well, he'd be a great 30 for 30 himself.
Right, himself right? Yeah. Exactly. I mean, this guy had all the tools in the world, all the gifts, and it just didn't work out. And when it did look like it was going to work out, whether it was with Michael Malone or with Anthony Davis down there in New Orleans, he gets hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a terrible story. And did I ever tell you the story about when I saw DeMarcus Cousins in Denver? Remember, he was in Denver playing for Michael Malone. And he walked past, and I said, DeMarcus, what's up, man? Kyle Draper, I do play-by-play for the Sacramento Kings. And I was like, he said, oh, my God, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking that job. Like, he was gracious to me.
Oh.
And I was like, no, thank you, big fella. You know, I wouldn't be here. And so there's a little bit of respect there. DMC is my guy. Like I said, saw him in, when he got recruited and played his first year at Kentucky. I was there.
Yeah, I think I've told you this story before, but real short story. We were doing a radio interview with Harold Presley one time. And Harold said he had to call Calipari about something. And it was something about one of his boys or something. And he says he calls up Calipari. Calipari sees 916 and answers with, what did he do now? Sir, that's what Harold says. And he's like, what?
Right.
What? And he assumed it was something about
DMC.
Yeah.
Hey, man. I was speaking of John Calipari. I was at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony when he got inducted. And he had all his former players up there, Cousins, John Wall. I mean, the fraternity that he has put together and his players so loyal to him, it's been amazing to see.
We noticed that the NBA has been talking a lot lately about what are we going to do about all this offense, right? Did you know that offense has gone down since the All-Star break? Through Tuesday's games, teams are scoring 4 fewer points per game after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a lot of, mumbo jumbo and nerdy and wonky, but points down 115 a game to 111. And here's the thing. Referees are calling fewer fouls.
Yes.
We're talking about DeMarcus here. Yeah. Got DeMarcus on the brain. De'Aaron Fox said last night, at one point he was answering a question. He said, look, we can pretend they're not, but they're calling the game differently now.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And a report came out back in February that the league in the offseason was going to look at scoring and try to curb it. And Mike Brown had a stat, and this is like 4 or 5 games after the All-Star break, where the number of fouls and free throw attempts were down in the NBA. And so I think it's a concerted effort by the league to address
this.
Yes,
it sure appears to be. Referees calling fewer fouls. The NBA contends it gave no instructions to the officials. No. Nothing to see here. What's interesting about this piece in The Ringer is they point out that fewer fouls and fewer free throws would only account for part of the decline. But the more research they do, basically it comes down to this. Fewer free throws affects the game in other ways. The pace has slowed down as well. And that also contributes to the lack of scoring. So fewer fouls called is slowing down the game, and it actually is driving down.
It's slowing down the game.
Yeah.
I would think it would be opposite. Like the more fouls you call, the slower the game is because guys aren't in rhythm. They aren't, it's stopping and starting as much. But you're saying it's the other way.
That's what they're saying. Yeah, and we can, I don't want to bore everybody or you by breaking down all the numbers. The dynamic, bottom line, dynamic shows the ripple effects of fewer whistles and more defensive physicality. Officiating, fouls, defense, pace, and scoring are all intertwined. So,
have you noticed it when you watch the game? Has it affected your viewing pleasure at all?
I haven't noticed the scoring's down.
Right.
But I notice, the guys are just getting hammered now.
Yeah. But
There's way too many instances where a player, and I don't care what team it is, sometimes it seems to favor this team or that team, but overall, just watching games, there's too many times to me that I see that and go, how are they supposed to play basketball when you're getting just wailed on like that and you're letting it go?
Yeah, Domas got whacked across the arms, De'Aaron Fox. But then conversely, you get LeBron James getting a touch foul and Harrison Barnes is looking like, and so I think officiating in the NBA – is at an all-time, like, difficulty level. It's extremely hard right now, and it's hard for a fan or a viewer, and it's frustrating as well because, and we talked about it before, what's marginal contact? One guy's definition and view of marginal contact is different. And so you got three referees out there who are all kind of, you know, calling a different game, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so and the old rule was, well, players got to adjust. But you got three referees who one guy views it as marginal, another guy's doesn't. It's frustrating to watch at times.
This is easier said than done. But to me, no matter where scoring is, if it's up, if it's down, it doesn't matter. A foul's a foul.
Or you're not playing basketball.
One more thing. In addition, I'm in favor of, you know, finding guys for flops and all that. But you should also find guys for what, well, we'll just call it the LeBron, which is you go to the basket and then grab your head, you know? Like somebody smoked you in the head. And like there was one last night where I think he did that. I don't know if anyone touched him.
Yeah.
He gets to the basket, then it's like, that's like a form
I think
of
that
might
have been the HB one. I think so. Yeah, it's, you know, I think guys, and you see it all the time, are more interested in drawing the foul than actually scoring the basket. And these guys are actors right now.
Yeah.
Like they are highly trained actors right there.
They are.
They are great at drawing the fouls. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, we look at my guy Joel Embiid out there in Philly, LeBron James, like all these guys, the art of drawing the foul, James Harden, it's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Alex says Lillard pulled Malik's jersey with a Monk foul. So, and it's hard to understand. That's a bottom line. It must be crazy for the players because what is a foul again? That was just a foul a minute ago, and now it's not. And
it's one of those things where, man, maybe you see what you can get away with and then pull it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that could be really harmful for the product going forward.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay, scoring's down. Is the product better since the All-Star break? Is it noticeable? No, but how would this affect the Kings if this trend continues? Do you think it would be beneficial to them? Is it six of one, half dozen of the other?
I don't think it would be. I think the Kings would benefit from a tighter whistle, more fouls being called, because unless this new version of the Kings we saw the last couple of days is how they're going to be, then okay, let's play it that way. But otherwise, I think, you know, De'Aaron Fox, because of his sleight of frame, his size, I want a tight whistle when he goes to the. I don't want him to have to play through contact every time. I don't want him to get whacked and go through it. Now, Domas can play through it, but I would like to see De'Aaron Fox, in my opinion, get to the line eight times a game.
How many free throws would Domas shoot a game if he was wearing a Laker jersey?
Oh, my gosh.
Easy 10, right?
Easy
10. I mean, an automatic 10.
Like, it's, I mean, he gets whacked. So you mentioned whack across the arm. Like, he's the poster boy for getting whacked across the arms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think Katie's going to run down from the booth.
Oh, my God. Katie be on one sometimes, man. Yeah. She is like, I'm like, Katie, it's 10 minutes to go in the first quarter. Like, the officials, you know, can we at least save that to the second half or something? Yeah, that's funny.
Is first round home court, is there any way that's still in play for the Kings?
I like
next
that.
With the drive. Guys, sacked up. How about this comment here on the YouTube chat from BCH Custom Cabinetry? Firing Malone set us back 10 years. I don't know about 10 years.
Let's do the math.
Was that
2014
or so?
Yeah, maybe, 2013? Almost.
Okay.
About 9 3/4 or whatever the math works out to be.
Given that he went on to coach a team to the NBA championship. And Calpio's got another story here, Drapes. And, you know, he's given to fibbing. I'm not sure if I can take this to the bank. Calpio says, I invented fantasy high lie. And
he did not say. He did. You're not buying that one? That might be one I believe. Calpio's my guy, man. I might believe that one.
A little skeptical.
That's awesome.
Of that.
That's awesome.
You look at the standings here, and I know I have been all over the place with the Kings. They're this, they're that. They'll never do this, never do that. But in your professional opinion, the Kings right now, is home court in the first round still in play? They got 38 wins. They're sixth. The Clippers are fourth. They got 41 wins. So the Kings are 3.5 back of the Clippers, and then you got the Pelicans in between you there. I mean, mathematically, it's possible.
It's possible, right. The homer in me wants to say yes. because the Clippers, I think, are reeling right now. They've lost two in a row. They got some injury issues they're dealing with. Right now, they're a game behind the Pelicans, but really two because of the tiebreaker. I think it is, Whitey. I think it is.
We're just saying reasonably possible.
Yeah, I think reasonably. I mean, they'd have to go on one of those seven-game win streaks right now. And when you look at the schedule, I believe it is possible right now because you got the Knicks, good team, solid team, but they're banged up. Then you got Memphis, Toronto, Washington. Mm-hmm. So this could be a critical stretch. Right now, the Kings on a two-game winning streak. I just mentioned four games. Two could go to six or seven pretty, I don't want to say easily, but it's plausible. It's realistic. It's a possibility. And like I said before, I think the Clippers, I think they're you know, we did stock up, stock down.
Kawhi's
their stock is down.
Hurt, yeah.
Kawhi's hurt right now. He's banged up.
I think Minnesota, there's a little bit of a wild card factor with them as well, but they're, of course, they're further ahead. They already got 45 wins.
Right, right. They're a little out of reach. I think it's going to, you know, the Pelicans is a tricky one because nobody's talking about them. I want to pull up the NBA strength of schedule also, and I know we've done this exercise 1,000 times this season, but when you look at the NBA strength of schedule right now, the Kings have the eighth most difficult schedule remaining.
And that is based, again, just solely on the win-loss records
current
of
standings,
the teams.
Right. Doesn't factor in
left,
home,
here.
Road. Doesn't even factor in the injury situation. And so we got the Clippers still one game, but they're banged up. Remember about that. You got the Knicks twice. Ooh, that's – you still got the Knicks in Boston. Meanwhile, the team we're talking about, the Pelicans, they have the 11th most difficult schedule. They got Phoenix twice. So that could be – something interesting. And the Clippers, meanwhile, let me scroll up here. The Clippers have the 13th most difficult schedule. And so I think it's possible that the Kings can make a run to that number four, most likely number five spot. But they're going to have to go on, like I said, a nice little seven-game win streak or something like that.
Obviously, I think most Kings fans would be thrilled just with the sixth spot.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Kings end up in the play-in and they got to fight their way through that, if they do, all good. Right now, the Suns are trailing the Celtics 54-51 late in the first half. Other games that you know, factor into the race tonight.
Yeah.
Got the Mavericks at OKC.
Is Luka out, right? Yeah, he's out, right? He's banged up. And so, you know, you asked me yesterday who we should be cheering for. What was it?
It was
Dallas and Golden State. And, you know, I actually was cheering for Dallas, and here's why. That loss by Golden State last night means, to me, they're out of the picture.
Really?
I don't have to worry about them no more. Same thing with the Lakers losing last night. They're not a factor to me. I'm not worried about them. I'm not looking in the rearview mirror when it comes to these guys. And so, thank you, Dallas Mavericks. And the fact that you still have two against Dallas, you can control your own destiny with those guys. So, I was cheering for Dallas to get that win last night.
Mm. Don't you think that given how it looks like the Kings may have found a new kind of identity, a more physical style of play, that's really going to be put to the test against the Knicks? We'll get a good idea whether that's sustainable and real or not against that team.
Yeah, and Jalen Brunson, you know, you talk about, and there's Coach Tom Thibodeau also, I love Tibbs, but you talk about an identity, a culture. I feel like the Knicks are starting to develop it, you know, tough.
That's another culture built out of just wasteland.
Right, exactly. There was nothing, you know. It was the local dump, you know. And somebody put some money into it, came in. And I think when you get a guy like Jalen Brunson come in there, you know, you get Josh Hart. These are tough, hard-nosed, physical guys. And I think when I mentioned earlier the Kings culture versus where they want to be, I look at how the Knicks play. And that, to me, in terms of their physicality or their toughness, is how Sacramento wants to
be. They got OG back, too, don't they?
I believe. Yeah, he just came back the other day. Yeah. No Julius Randle, though. I believe Julius Randle is still out. But this is going to be a tough matchup. And this, in my opinion, is going to be a matchup where that three-guard lineup with Keon and Davion and Fox or Malik, That you're going to see a lot of that, I think, come Saturday.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. It's time for Check It!
Mike Check.
With TC. What's up, TC?
Yes, sir. Check it, check it. Whitey Drake, what's up?
What's up? Hold on, you got your own music now, bro?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. Are you tapping in or what, TC?
Drake, I'm moving up in the world, man. I'm learning from you.
Next thing you know, you're going to be driving a Mercedes-Benz from Mercedes-Benz of Stockton, straight down I-5. Yeah. What you got,
sir,
man?
Hey, but look, what I got is, right, hey, so I'm going to come from the standpoint is, don't nobody want to play us, bro. We're scary. Like you said, I'm not worried about the Lakers. Hey, the Kings, if we got to get into a play-in, I'm not worried about them, bro, because we could beat both those teams. But I think, honestly, I think we're going to get the fifth seed. Check it. Hey, with Keon Ellis, I feel everybody when they say they want to throw him in a starting position, but we need all hands on deck. And why I say that is because this summer, I truly believe we're going to move off of Herder. And Monk is going to move into that starting position with a new contract, and Keon Ellis is going to take Monk's position. Y'all dig me? Y'all with me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. Yeah, I hear you.
You know, so that's why I say, you know what? Don't fool with Herder, because you already got Herder's head messed up. But right now, listen, Whitey and Drake, Jay in the back, we need all hands on deck. So, Herder, you can keep starting. As long as Keon is getting his minutes, and as long as Davion getting his minutes, as long as Alex Lane is getting his minutes, Kessler, the boy Jones we picked up, whoever off that bench, we need all hands on deck for this playoff run. I promise you, that's the main focus right now. Playing, tweaking with the lineups, we'll do that in the playoffs, and I think that's what Mike got in his bag right now. Mike going to throw a lot of teams off with the lineups, thinking that, oh, they just going to have a traditional. Oh, no, we're going to throw people off in the series. Watch my words, boys, but look, check it. Don't mess with the lineup, man. Everybody all hands on deck right now.
TC! Check it.
Yep. Check it with TC. Heard only here with the Drive Guys. He brings up an interesting question, which we'll answer, and we'll get back to the phones as well. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Drive Guys, what a win for the Kings last night. A sweep. Get out the purple broom and sweep away the Lakers, who look like they're declining. Maybe it's a little Schadenfreude. Taking joy in someone else's misery. But not only are the Kings ascending, it looks like, wow, the Lakers are just trying to figure out how to hang on to stay where they are. They're slipping away.
And they don't have any help coming, right? Like, their roster is. And I know they got some guys banged up, but Cam Reddish ain't going to come to the rescue.
I don't think
That's not going to happen. Jared Vanderbilt ain't going to make that much of a difference. And they're at a loss right now. Like, they are... You know,
we got Gabe Vincent coming.
Oh, our guy, former Stockton King, UC Santa Barbara. But hearing what AD said the other day against the Timberwolves, after the Timberwolves win, about how important last night was, and for the Kings to once again smack them up, you would think we'd get the Lakers' best shot last night. It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, like we both said, that first quarter, the Lakers brought it. That first quarter was, whoa.
Right.
Was not sustainable for them.
Sort of like last week in L.A. Remember, they came out like gangbusters, looked good, built that 19-point lead, and then the second quarter happened and the Kings ran away with it.
I was not happy the way Austin Reeves was lighting it up a little bit. Didn't matter, but I was not happy with that.
He looked like Anthony Davis should have been. Like, the way he looked like he understood he had been struggling against the Kings all season long. I mentioned it several times during the broadcast. Austin Reeves this season before last night averaged 10 points a game against the Sacramento Kings. He was awful against the Kings. Last night, it looked like he wanted some payback.
Really good game. But it didn't matter. We just had another great episode of Check It with TC. He brought up an interesting thing talking about next year. And who knows what's going to happen next year. He says maybe they move off a Herder and then you have Monk in the starting lineup. And that's what I thought was really interesting. What if in order to keep Malik, you had to say, look, okay, you want to start? We want to keep you. You'll be a starter here. You'd have to do it, wouldn't you?
If he demanded being a starter?
Because he says, look, I can go to wherever. San Antonio's offering more money than you and a starting job. I want to stay here, but, I mean.
I got to be a starter.
Help me help you. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
I think
so. He's in a position of leverage right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and we talked about it yesterday, there aren't many people like Malik Monk walking the streets right now that you can just go out there and get. He is the perfect sixth man. He's perfect for this team. His relationship with De'Aaron is well documented. And that's the thing about this Kings team. You know, sure, we might want to improve the roster, improve the talent. But when you look at the group together, they all seem to like each other. They enjoy playing. They fill their roles. Their personalities all seem to mesh. And so that's hard to replace. So if you let Malik walk, it's like a family member. You can't replace that overnight. It's going to take some time, and I think you take a step back.
And it's not a family member that you don't like. It's a,
right, exactly.
It's a vitally important family member.
Exactly. It's somebody that you wake up looking forward to see every day. And then you wake up one day and he's not there? Come on, man.
Yeah. And again, we have no way of knowing whether I don't know what he wants. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting he's making these demands, but he certainly would be in position to make that demand, potentially.
I think so. I think when you look at the list of free agents, and I'll have to pull it up, but I would imagine he'd be one of the more coveted guys because he's only 26 right now. I think he's just now entering his prime. And, you know, we've talked about Orlando, maybe San Antonio, some of these teams that need creators, a guy that can only not only get his bucket but also get everybody else. He's earned himself a lot of money with his play this season.
Yeah, and also some of those teams – would benefit, who wouldn't benefit from having that infusion of that
whatever
swagger.
It is. Yes. That
unique, that unique Malikness.
Yes. Ooh, can I use that?
Please.
Did you see, I think it was him that hit a three from the logo last night. And I was ready to say, like, I was like, ooh, this is a perfect time to say Malik from Stockton or whatever. And I couldn't get it out in time. I just called it a logo three.
King
I was
of the
like,
Kings.
Darn it.
King of the Kings.
I like that. He says. Let's talk to, is it Brenda? 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Give me Mitch. Can you give me Mitch on Sacktown Sports? Hello, Mitch. How are you?
How's it going, guys?
Good. What's up? What's on your mind today, Mitch?
Hey, two things. Don't let the call walks or travels or palming a ball. I see that so much. I can't, on TV, I can't even count the steps.
Yeah.
And you say the scoring is down. I'm seeing much improvement in Keegan and Mr. Harrison Barnes. He's having a better career now than he did when he was in his 20s.
Harrison
Barnes?
Yeah,
like it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy with Barnes. Glad we kept him.
Yeah.
And I like this key on Mr. Ellis here. We're looking good, I think.
Yes.
You really gave it to the Lakers, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch, appreciate that.
Mitch, been old. Thanks.
You know, the thing about traveling, and, you know, a lot of us that have watched basketball a long time watch the NBA and go, that's traveling. And, you know, the rules are changed. There's a lot of time it's not actually a travel. They allow the gather and – yeah,
it's a different game, right?
It's not actually a travel.
It's not a travel. It's, you know, I follow, I forget, you know, B-ball breakdown or somebody on Twitter and X, and they're like, actually, when you look at it, it's the gather step, and then it's like, I don't know what a travel is.
Right.
I don't know when guys establish the pivot anymore. Like, seriously.
Yeah. It's totally different. It's far cry from what we, if you grew up playing, you know, basketball rec leagues or high school, and this was a travel. It's like in the NBA, they've literally changed the rules. Also, you know, on a drive, like you get a step and a half, right? No, you literally get, is it two? I think it's two and a half.
Two and a half
by rule. Yeah. So people go, that's a travel. This is crazy. Why don't they call it? Well, because they changed the rules for LeBron. It's not actually a travel.
And you
anymore.
Know what's so crazy about it is check out youth basketball. Because players, kids will try to emulate what they see in the NBA.
Yeah.
But on that youth level, high school level or whatever, it's getting called every time.
You know what's funny, Kyle, is around here when Jay Will was, you know, making magic and you'd watch kids on the playground trying to do what he did. And it was like, no, you can't do that.
Right. Yes. Yes.
All right. How about Rick? Sacktown Sports. Hey, Rick, what's going on?
No, not much. It's kind of funny listening to you guys compared to a couple of days ago when trying to decide who to trade for. But, you know, the Kings are so different when they're not turning the ball over. And I just think they're playing to win instead of playing not to lose. It's a huge difference. But the main thing catching your conversation is about Malik Monk and starting position. Sometimes that can be a very bad move because – then you lose a valuable sixth man and you lose depth off your bench. So, you know, moving someone up to that starting position, boy, I hope if they choose to do that, that they choose someone that can score off the bench. But, you know, kudos to the Kings for not panicking and trying to make a trade just to make a trade, just to make things happen. What happened is they're just playing better basketball. Anyway, thanks, guys. Have a good afternoon.
All right, thank
you. All right, thank you,
Rick.
Great
job. That's a great point as it applies potentially to Keon starting too. You know, as you talk about, well, when you put somebody in a starting lineup, it changes a lot. And that's why, again, anybody who heard Mike Brown knows that he was been pretty clear each of the last two nights that Keon's not, you know, they're just not starting Keon Ellis, but they love what he's given them.
All right, why do you think there's an infatuation with who's starting?
Because people think that, well, those are your best players and they're playing the whole game. And, you know, it's like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Malik closes every single game. When it's money time and time to win, Malik is always on the floor. And I said it yesterday and I'll say it again today. The starting five, the start of games is not the problem for the Sacramento Kings. When I looked at it yesterday, I think they were seventh in offensive rating in the first quarter or something like that. Like, so they get off usually the good starts. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, how do they sustain that and maintain that? And I think that's where Keon can really help them out.
Jay, didn't we have a deal around here that 1999 year, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was a year afterwards, like Corliss was starting and Peja was coming off the bench. And you could see, you know, like Peja's going to be phenomenal. But it was like, well, okay, but he's coming off the bench right now. He's not, remember that?
Sounds a little familiar. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So we've you know, like most cities, we go through that from time to time.
Been through that before.
But it takes a while before that guy is ready.
Ready.
There's no benefit to rushing into those decisions.
Right. I mean, this is a guy talking about Keon who 2 months ago was a two-way player. Now we're trying to start him on a hopefully a contending team, and so
of course he is 6-0 as a starter.
Come on, man!
And his offense is coming around.
And his offense is.
That's right.
Please don't say that, Jay. Whitey said that after he scored like 2 points one game. His offense is coming. No, he had 5 that game. You said that, but remember that a couple weeks
then
ago.
What did he do the night I said that?
Yeah, like 15, didn't he? 15, 18?
Yeah.
I need to see more. And I don't know, like we talked about, now's not the time. Like, you're late in the season. You're juggling starting lineups right now? I don't know.
You saved that for the playoffs, right?
Yeah, the X factor. Yes, sir.
Like Alex Lynn last year. Where's this guy? Oh, all of a sudden, the playoffs. And Chris Watkins was mentioning that. Doug on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Doug. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good. What a day to be a Kings fan, huh, Doug?
It is indeed. Oh, my gosh. I saw a few people in Laker outfits today. I had to let them know. you were talking about traveling a minute ago, and I grew up watching basketball with my dad and played it all through school. And the thing that they do now, you're right, they must have changed the rules because, it just seems so bad in so many cases. But the other thing that drives me crazy is when they palm the ball for so long sometimes that it seems like they stop dribbling and then they start again. And that's like a double dribble. And I call that to the TV every time, and nobody listens. You know, it just drives me crazy, and I just wanted to get your take on that whole thing. Do they change that rule, too? You can do it twice, or what?
Sorry, Doug, I wasn't listening. No, I'm kidding. I'm just – thank you. Yeah, as I said, I talked to Jerry Reynolds. That drives him crazy, too.
The palming? It's definitely different. But, you know
– But they haven't changed the rules.
They haven't changed the rule. Yeah. But, you know, this isn't 1960s when you got – you know, Bob Cousy head down dribbling like that and, you know, like that. I mean, like, there's some swagger to the game right now. And so I think what you're seeing is a little more, it's more closer to what you see on the streets and the playground and everything like that. It's more artsy, if you will. And it's Allen Iverson, the one that sort of changed that whole narrative. Remember that? That
crossover,
when he crossover and he would bring it up big time. Like, and so I don't mind it as much. Like, if a guy's just dribbling up the court, you do see this a little bit more nowadays, the carry, you know, the turnover a little more. But it doesn't bother me.
I wonder, in the history of the NBA, has there ever been a player who was called for the palm who said yes. You know, because they always see a guy like try to go be on his back and carry it on his back, you know, for like five steps, hey. And they'll whistle him, and he's like, "What? What?
What did I do?" Yeah, it's and who was it? Dame did something the other day. He caught the ball and sort of like walked with it, had it like for like three steps, and then finally put it down and no whistle. I think if it doesn't affect the play, I don't think officials are inclined to call it as much.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Any closing thoughts you have on the Kings? We'd love to hear them when we come back. Did KD save the legacies of Steph, Clay, and Dre? One Hall of Famer says that's exactly what happened. We'll have the story when we come back. Drive, guys, Sacktown Sports. All right, Drapes, we know as we look at the standings, we got the Kings right now in sixth. And they're tied with the Suns, but the Suns, you know, the Kings have the tiebreaker on them. So I know you got the Suns on. I don't want to look. The Suns have this brutal schedule, and they keep winning these games. I know they're in Boston. Yeah. So please tell me they're losing by 20 in Boston.
They are losing, but it's not 20. Right now it's 10:44 left to go in the third. Still early.
Hanging in there in some of these games. That,
yeah. They got the second most difficult schedule. And, you know, you knew that. And they got Boston. They got Minnesota twice. They have Denver still and Milwaukee. And so they have a tough road. But it seems like they're almost kind of rounding into shape. Guys are healthy now. Booker's back. Beal's out there. KD is doing his thing. And so the pesky Suns. Yes.
I'll feel a lot better once they start sinking, once those suns start setting in the West. The Kings, it's a great point you made, too. The Kings are a game behind the Pelicans, but as we know, they're essentially two games behind the Pelicans.
Yeah, but you still got one more against them. And so, you know, that'll count as a game if you can win that. And then, you know, that last week, Pelicans and Suns, your final week, and then Portland, your last game. It may come down to that.
I'd be a little surprised if it doesn't.
Right.
You know? We got a lot to look forward to with the Knicks coming into town on Saturday. What do you think of this? Maybe you saw this. The Draymond Green Show is hosted by Draymond Green, and he had Isaiah Thomas on. It was kind of cool because he's, you know, Draymond went to Michigan State, and Isaiah was a great Piston. So it was great to see the, you know, all the respect there. But Isaiah Thomas said that Kevin Durant coming to the Warriors when he did, he said, Kevin Durant saved the legacies of you and Clay and Steph. He said that to Draymond. He said, you guys, you would be known as a team that won 73 and then couldn't seal the deal if KD hadn't come to your rescue. What do you think of that?
I 100% agree with that.
Do you?
They would be the team that was known for losing a 3-1 lead.
Yeah.
Set the NBA all-time record with 73 wins, but then collapsed and folded. And, you know, like I said before, it also changed LeBron's career. Like, LeBron may have six right now if Kevin Durant doesn't go to Golden State. And so I 100% agree with that. And think about, you know, Steph Curry. Some people say, is he top 10 all time, top 4 all time, top 5? He might have only had two titles. Like, to me, if you're going to be called the greatest or in that top 5 conversation, there is no doubt that when you win your championships, you have to be the best player on your team. Magic was the best player on those Lakers teams when he won. And Kareem, you know, that first year, maybe you could say Kareem was, but Kareem got hurt and Magic filled in. Yeah, so he made up for that. LeBron's always been the best player. Jordan's always been the best player. Steph Curry has not always been the best player on the champion.
That's
Kevin Durant
true.
Was a better player at that time. They won those two championships.
I mean, he won the finals MVP twice.
Twice.
He did. Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He was the best player on one of the best teams we've ever seen.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, what Kevin Durant did would be like, Larry Bird joining the Lakers in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the Lakers were already stacked. Golden State had already won 73 games, and then they add Kevin Durant. Come on, man.
Yeah, I agree with it, too. The thing is, you know, obviously we'll never know, and the thing that I wonder about a lot in that sliding doors moment is, let's say KD hadn't gone there. The Warriors would have won 73, then, as you say, blown the lead. And then what would they have done?
What
Somebody would have had
done?
To been responsible. Would they blow it up? Would they have done something drastic? where would they have gone from there? And they would have been, that a hangover. They would have been, it would have been, oh man, we had it and we lost. And instead it's like, we got KD.
Right. Their answer to blowing the 3-1, 73 wins is, all right, let's go get KD.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, all right, Steve Kerr got to go. You got to get rid of Klay Thompson, whatever it may have been. Draymond Green, remember, he was a big reason why they lost that championship. And so I think Kevin Durant, in my opinion, and I think you might agree because we've talked about, he's probably one of the most underrated players.
I agree.
Like, in the NBA history. Like, this guy, 25-plus points per game, his entire career basically, led the Warriors to two titles. He actually not single-handedly, but he looked LeBron eye to eye and defeated him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that says something to me.
Once KD joined them, when he did, and give them credit for having the wherewithal to bring KD in, they deserve credit for that as an organization. But there were no consequences. There was no accountability because it didn't matter what happened. We lost, but it doesn't matter now because we got him. You know?
Right.
So there's no, like you say, we fire the coach, get rid of the players, we have to change things. No.
No.
It didn't, yeah, and we're good.
And think about it. And you didn't have to answer an off-season of what ifs, why did you collapse, even into the next season. No. You get Kevin Durant, that changes the entire narrative about the Warriors. Like, you're right. I don't think enough is being made about that collapse. Like, you're talking about an all-time great in Steph Curry. You're talking about the best regular season team in NBA history, and they collapsed on the biggest of stages.
Game 7 at home.
Game 7 at home. Mm-hmm. Think about that. You got a 3-1 lead, a Game 7 at home, and you lose that? Man.
I also think KD was ultimately very foolish for leaving there.
Really?
Don't you?
I mean, what it could have... Yeah. It could have done wonders for his career even more. Maybe another couple championships for him. But it sounds like the whole Draymond situation was untenable. Like, the organization maybe would have had to make a decision. Like, it doesn't seem like those two could have coexisted going forward.
I thought, from where I sat, that what happened there, KD didn't leave because Draymond got mad at him during that Clipper game. Draymond got mad at him because
they knew he was leaving.
Yeah,
he was leaving.
Because he was already kind of.
Why do you think he left, though? Ultimately, why do you think he left?
Just the grass is always greener, and I think he felt like he didn't, you know.
He wanted to play with his guys?
Once I win a championship, I'm good.
Right.
So he wins a championship, and then what it is like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, but you didn't do it. You know, I think that really surprised him. And then it's like, I'm not getting the respect I deserve because I'm on this team with Steph and these guys. I got to go find my own. Maybe he doesn't regret that.
But then he goes to Brooklyn with Kyrie and James Harden, too, though.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, I don't know why you would want to hitch your wagon to Kyrie at that point. Could have worked out. It could still work out for him, but he's got to win one more title, doesn't he, to cement his legacy?
I think so. And I just, you know, as much, you know, we're watching Phoenix right now get hammered by Boston 14, make it 12 after that. Yeah, after that B.O. bucket, you know. I look at what happened in Brooklyn, and what's going on in Phoenix is entirely different. But they're good, but just still not good enough to win a championship. And they've had some injuries, obviously, and maybe they can go on a run. But they're not in a top three betting favorite in my book to win a title.
Right. There he goes.
But, man, he's so good.
Yeah. He got weary of Kerr, too. He said some really stupid things about Kerr. And you remember when they were playing in the conference finals one year? And Kerr was talking to KD, I think it was his first year with them, and they mic'd it and played it on TV where Kerr's going, you know, Michael had to learn to trust his teammates too. And he was like lecturing KD, and they played it on TV.
They played it on air.
Your KD's like, what?
Right. Well, what? They're doing that to me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a little bit of that, right?
Yeah, yes. Where I think so.
KD didn't feel like the organization backed him or had his back, and no, even with the Draymond situation, too.
Uh-huh.
And I know that was after the fact, and maybe they, like you said, they thought that he was leaving anyway, but the organization didn't back him in that Draymond situation either.
Where you headed for dinner tonight? Anywhere you can share?
No, I just had a sandwich, bro. I had not had anything to eat all day. Got some DoorDash delivered, so I'm good. I'm about to go get the kids and hang out.
Awesome. Have a great evening. Thanks for being with us. Back with you tomorrow on Drive, guys. Sacktown Sports.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.